What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of FanCast Movies Podcast, the FanCast Movies Podcast. We are a podcast about movies, all things movies. My name is Eric Davis. Of course, I am joined by Sean O'Connell. Sean.
Yes, sir.
This is a really big week. We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
A huge movie coming out. But first, before we get to anything, today is sort of a sad day. We're mourning the loss of Blockbuster Video stores. Blockbuster Video, if you remember them, have officially decided to close all of their U.S. stores, meaning that the brick-and-mortar video store is pretty much no more, although there still are some in the malls. I was actually in the mall last night. I saw one. But Blockbuster going out is sort of a big deal, especially for guys like you and I who grew up in this era. So I have to ask you, Sean.
Yes.
Your most memorable Blockbuster Video memory. I know that was awkwardly phrased, but what's your greatest memory for Blockbuster?
It's crystal clear. I dated a girl in high school. I wasn't old enough to drive, so every Friday, either her parents or my parents would either bring me over to her house or bring her over to my house, and we would go to a Blockbuster Video. There was one near her house and one near my house, like just two blocks away in Long Island in Massapequa, for Eric to throw out there. There's one on Sunrise Highway. Eric is probably very close to where you
are. There is. He's throwing this out because that's where I live. Well, I live thereabouts because I know.
It's hyper local podcasting.
This is a hyper local podcast.
And we would spend literally an hour to an hour and a half walking around, you know, debating what to get, pick two movies out or something, bring them back, and just, you know, sit in on a Friday night and watch movies. And so and we did that almost every week for about 2 years.
And then she broke up with you because your relationship was so boring.
Because I wasn't nearly as excited.
This guy never takes me out to dinner. We're always renting freaking Blockbuster Videos.
But I mean, you know, I just loved, like, I could spend hours just perusing boxes, you know, like cover boxes, and trying to figure out, like, what that movie might be about. There was something so exciting about having all of those stories at your fingertips. And I think the joy of being able to walk the aisles, you know, of a store divided up by genres, it's unmatched. It's just, there's nothing really like it. So what's yours?
Yeah, I don't have like a concrete, I mean, when I think of Blockbuster Video, I just think about going there on a Friday or Saturday night and then being out of the movie that I wanted to watch.
Right.
Because usually I was going there, I wanted to see the new release, and of course they were out of them. But I think my fondest memory really is just getting to the Blockbuster store and walking in, and I always had the same routine where all of their newer movies were on the outer walls. And then, like, they'd stick all their older movies kind of – they'd section them off by genre in the middle of the store.
Right.
So I would always go to the outer wall, and I'd go all the way to the A, and I'd just do this slow walk.
Right.
Down. And whenever I would go with like my girlfriend or one of my friends, you know, I would always scan faster. So I would grab like a video from M, and I'd run down to C, and I'd be like, I heard this was really good. And she'd be like, I'm still in C. You know, it's like, what are you in M already? You know, it was always this fight of us screaming across the store. You know, what about this movie? Well, you're already in P. I'm just still in L.
Do you remember the frustration, too, of finding, like, the case of a movie you wanted to see and the tape wasn't behind it?
And it wasn't – yeah, exactly. And you're like, well, what is this doing here? Nothing's behind it. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, sometimes they would put the DVDs in the case, but then they – for a while they had that system where it was behind the actual case. And, yeah, it was like this game of chicken. You'd kind of see the case and you'd go and you'd hurry up and pull it away and there'd be nothing behind there.
Well, like, then you could run up to the counter and see if someone has returned it yet and it just hasn't been –
that was the other move. When like the last – your last thing is when you'd go and you're literally like hanging over the counter looking into the Dropbox.
Right.
Trying to figure out, and like you think you see some – and the guy's like, no, dude, you really can't do that. I'm like, well, they're in this store.
Right.
Just go and fumble through the box there. I think I see it.
A blue Blockbuster membership card, like in my preteen wallet, was like it was way cooler than a driver's license or like anything else that I had of value. I loved having that card and being able to go and take out a movie anytime I wanted. One of the things about Blockbuster recently, because I know we sound super old getting nostalgic like this, but as these big Blockbuster stores were closing, I myself and a lot of other geeks like me were able to swoop in and get old movies. I've got a few sitting on my shelf that have – they're in the Blockbuster case still, and they were being sold for like $1 or $2 as they just got rid of their inventory. It was a great opportunity to sort of go in and sort of beef up your own personal library with Blockbuster's closing.
Now, of course, Blockbuster's closing their doors this weekend means really only one thing. It means that if you were going to a Blockbuster video store this weekend to get your latest movie fix, you cannot do that. So what can you do? Well, you can go to the movies, Sean, and Thor: The Dark World is hitting theaters this weekend. So
I think is that this week? What?
That is this weekend. It's a Thor movie. Can you
imagine?
They
should advertise that.
They should advertise that more. But Thor: The Dark World is arriving in theaters this week. I don't even know if I've talked about it with you yet, after you've seen it. I don't think so, because I think
saw it last night.
We haven't even talked about this yet, and folks, we haven't even talked about this before we came on. I have no idea what Sean thought of the movie. So that'll be fun discussion to have. But first, before we kind of get into our quick thoughts on Thor without spoiling it, I want to rank the Marvel movies. Not the X-Men's, the Spider-Man's, not the stuff owned by other studios, but let's just do this. These kind of Marvel Studios movies, from the Iron Man through to Thor: The Dark World. We're talking Incredible Hulk, Captain America, The First Avenger, The Avengers.
Right.
What am I missing? Thor,
Iron Man.
Yeah, right. So we're going to rank those movies, because I think right now Marvel is doing something that nobody else is doing. And we're actually seeing that more this week, because they've announced that the show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that they have on ABC is going to do a crossover episode with Thor: The Dark World on November. Yeah, it's very smart. Well, November 19th. And it's funny, we've seen this coming for a while. I know that Ron Howard was trying to put together that adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower. And the big thing that he wanted to do was an adaptation that crossed over different mediums. Something was on TV, stuff was on the web, stuff was in movies. I think it was a little too ambitious for a couple of years ago when they wanted to do this. But now Marvel doing this means that everybody's like, okay, well, Marvel's done it, so we can do it now.
Right. It's getting to that point.
Exactly. Definitely. And I would expect within the next 12 months, assuming Marvel has success with this crossover on television, and you know they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Fast and the Furious television show, because I think that franchise is the franchise that wants to evolve in the same way that Marvel is.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing some of these movies cross over with their television shows.
Well, Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek's the perfect example. Exactly. They kind of blaze that trail. It's going from a working television series, you know, in various different forms to, you know, multiple films every couple of years.
Yeah, but they're doing things that nobody else is doing, and that's why it's exciting to watch Marvel. Even if you're not this huge superhero movie dork, there's still plenty to really like about what Marvel's doing. And so let's rank these movies. I feel personally, I loved Iron Man. Don't get me wrong. They started off on Iron Man. But I feel like everything between Iron Man and that Captain America movie was a little bit all over the place, especially with regards to tone and them trying to kind of come out of the shadow of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies and establish something that's not like those. And I think in trying to establish that tone, they were a little bit all over the place. Not to say that those movies weren't enjoyable, because they were. I'm talking about The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, the first Thor movie. But not as good, I think, as this last run has been from Captain America, The Avengers, Iron Man 3, and Thor: The Dark World.
Okay.
So let's go through our rankings. What we're going to do, I think, we're just going to say our rankings from last to first. And then why don't you go first? And if I have anything that I want to interject, I will interject.
All right. Well, see, we're completely opposing viewpoints, and I'll explain why, I guess, after we've listed our lists. But I have to start, if I'm starting at 8, my least favorite of the Marvel movies, of the 8 Marvel movies, is Iron Man 2. 7 would be Iron Man 3. So I'm putting the two Iron Man
sequels interesting
at the bottom of the list.
That's interesting.
6... for me would be The Incredible Hulk. 5 is going to be Thor 2, and 4 is going to be Thor 1. I liked Branagh's film a little bit more than I like this one, which we can explain in greater detail. And so for me, like, I kind of put the origin stories of all these different characters in a 4-3-2 ranking. I put Thor at 4. I put the first Iron Man at 3. I put Captain America the First Avenger at 2. And my number one movie is The Avengers. I still think that that's the gold standard, which I think is both helping and hurting Marvel, because it's the one that introduced a much larger audience to these characters, but it's also now the bar against which, personally, I'm holding all these other films to, and I haven't yet, in Iron Man 3 or Thor the Dark World, seen a film, a complete film, that rises to the level that Whedon was able to deliver with The Avengers. And I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's a reality. So
I will agree. I will agree to a certain extent. I think our lists are kind of similar. My 8th is Iron Man 2 as well. I just don't think they were very successful with that film. I think it was rushed, and I think
it had
some problems. Yeah, I think that you know why that film had problems, because it peaked at its first major action sequence on the racetrack.
Yeah,
that action sequence. I'll be honest with you. That action sequence is one of my favorite of the Marvel movies. But it then everything from there was just downhill. The ending in Queens was just too dark, and it didn't really do anything for you. There was nothing kind of like I was watching that ending, and all I could think of is how cool the racetrack scene was. And it's like your action sequences should build.
They put Mickey Rourke's character like in another iron suit. Like, he was a cool Whiplash.
Yeah.
It became another Iron Man against multiple Iron Men, and that wasn't exciting.
No. So let's go. So from there, will go
7.
My 7 is Thor, the first Thor. I really didn't like the first Thor. I'm sorry.
Oh,
yeah, I know you liked it, but wasn't too crazy about it. Incredible Hulk would be my next one.
Okay.
Then I would go to probably Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Then I would go to Thor the Dark World.
All right. It's pretty high. Pretty high.
Then I would go to Iron Man.
Right.
And the Avengers.
Okay.
And my number one would be Captain America, First Avenger.
So we have the same top three. We just switched. Yeah. Cap and Avengers.
And you know what's funny about those top two? I think I had more fun. It's hard because I saw the Avengers in the theater. I saw Captain America at home.
Right.
So I don't know how I would have reacted watching Captain America in the theater. I had more fun watching the Avengers in the theater because I was with a crowd that was clapping and cheering and like hooting and hollering on these action sequences. But I overall, as in a complete movie, I enjoyed Captain America: The First Avenger more than I did The Avengers, because I really feel like The Avengers, it does boil down to that last segment. It's like, because it leaves you feeling like, wow, I just watched these 2 hours of awesome, when really you kind of probably just watched about 35, 40 minutes of awesome.
Yeah, but you know, and you point that out, and that's true, but there are these little pockets of like the Iron Man, Thor, Captain America fight is pretty exciting.
It's cool. It's cool. Yeah, it's definitely cool. I mean, it's hard to like, you know, you grew up kind of wanting to see this for so long.
Yes.
And then you see it and it's successful, and it's like, it's hard to kind of not dork out on that, you know what I'm saying? And that kind of stuff. But I feel like as a complete film, I just really loved Captain America. I love what Joe Johnston did with that movie. It felt more like an Indiana Jones movie than the last Indiana Jones movie. And I love the arc for Chris Evans' character. I loved Chris Evans in the role. I thought the cinematography was great. I thought it had some really cool scenes in it.
Well, it was really human too. Like, Cap is a great hero that you can cheer for. Like, Downey Jr. is an a-hole, you know, and he's supposed to be, and we laugh at him because of that. And Thor's like a god, so you can't really relate to him. Cap, Evans has done a tremendous job of making Cap a regular hero, and it seems like a lot of things they're trying to do with the Winter Soldier is still he's playing this guy who's a fish out of water and is uncomfortable with it, but can't not do the right thing. And I think that that's an element that played into the Indiana Jones character and played into so many of the heroes that we've sort of embraced, of these guys who, you know, the John McClanes of the world, you know, that they're in the wrong place at the right time and they need to sort of rise up and be bigger than they necessarily are. And I think that's what Marvel has made Cap into, a very very smartly.
Exactly. And furthermore, I cannot wait to see the next Captain America movie. I think it looks fantastic. But yeah, I think those are sort of the rankings. And I mean, you know, in the middle kind of gets jumbled up a little bit. And I'm curious to see why you like the first Thor more than Thor: The Dark World. And I have some suspicions of why that is. And I'm curious to see. But I think that, the Avengers and Captain America, the first Avengers, really sort of the standouts in our minds in terms of where Marvel's been and what they need to kind of accomplish next. And it'll be interesting. And I think next week we're going to kind of delve into the future of superhero movies and what's coming up. And but let's talk about Thor: The Dark World as we wrap this up. Yeah, because it's...
We really separated on where we hold Thor and Thor 2. So I'll go first. I liked Thor: The Dark World. I think that it is closer to a comic booky sort of... How do I put this? It's a movie that has a lot of like narrative, you know, problems, and it rushes through a lot of different things.
Yes.
And if you nitpick it, you know, you can easily defend it and say the defenders can turn around and say, "Oh, it's a comic book movie," and they're right, you know. But there are a lot of things happening in the movie that I had fun with, like I went with it. But if you stopped even just for a second and sort of asked, like, "Wait a second,
why does he want to destroy the universe again?" Yeah, no. If you do that kind of stuff, you can nitpick this movie and convince yourself that it's awful.
And I think you can nitpick it to death.
You
know, in ways that the Marvel movies to date so far haven't. And, after it all played out and I look back and I thought, like, you know, there are characters in the movie that are around because they're part of the Marvel universe at this point now. And they had no business being in it. And they had nothing to do in the movie either. You know, like Stellan Skarsgård's character, Eric.
I know, he's a little rough around the edges.
That's a nice way to put it.
So to speak. But yeah, I know there's a whole section of this movie. I feel like that's the weakest spot of these Thor movies so far, in my opinion, are their human characters. I give them credit. They gave Jane Foster a little bit more to do this time around, and Darcy had an intern, so it kind of brought her annoyingness of the first movie, because she was a little annoying in my book in the first movie, kind of brought that down a little bit because she had this male intern to sort of bounce jokes off of.
Yeah, and they're funny. There's humor in it, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's humor in it, but I feel like it's still the weak part of these Thor movies are these human characters. And yeah, like you said, Stellan Skarsgård, you know, they kind of put him in there. And I think it's more interesting to see what's happened to him because of because of him being brainwashed in the Avengers.
Yes.
I like that aspect of it.
Yes.
Of them showing like, okay, and I automatically think, okay, what's up with Hawkeye then? Is he running around in his underwear? Somebody shooting arrows at people?
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see if they keep that going for the next Avengers movie, and if we're going to see a Hawkeye that's just completely damaged because of what happened in the first Avengers movie. That's what I'm curious to see. But
But there's one other thing. I thought that Kenneth Branagh, more than Alan Taylor, tapped into the Shakespearean drama that I think is supposed to be. Here's where I get all film criticky. Thor is supposed to have this great tragic Shakespeare arc to it, with, you know, the son's trying to please Odin, and there's a line at the end of this movie where, you know, Odin essentially says, "There's one of my sons who wants the throne too badly, and another one who doesn't want it at all," and that should play into this like tremendous drama. And I thought that Branagh is just more built to deliver that. Now, I totally agree with people who rip his visual approach to Asgard as being way too shiny and way too digital. And if you could take the way that Alan Taylor like created these back avenues of Asgard, like you get to go to the prison cells, you get to go to the taverns, mm-hmm. you get to jump to other nine realms, and all that stuff looks great. But I don't think that he ever – I think whenever he had like – when he got to a path and he could go – A, one way to make it pretty serious, or B, one way to make it comic booky. I think he always went B and made it comic booky, and just sort of leaned back on this logic of, it's a superhero movie, you know? Let's just go with that, because people won't really mind that much. But, you know, I did kind of mind, because there were so many things that I kind of pointed at, like, how did Jane just, like, there's this thing called the ether, and it's a dark force, we're told. And Jane, she's on a date 1 minute, and then the next minute she's stumbling into a wormhole.
I'm gonna go for a walk into a wormhole.
Yeah, what's back here? Oh, hey, this is the ether. And all of a sudden,
hey, it's a plot point. What do you know?
I know, but it's just like... a lot of those things just sort of nagged me. And what this bothered me the most is that I took my 9-year-old to it, and I tried to keep a positive spin, and I was like, ah, it was fun. Because it's fun. Listen, I'll say it's a lot of fun. It's very fun. Marvel knows how to make a fun movie. If you want a serious plot, you're not going to get it here. But afterwards, I said to my son, I was like, so what'd you think? And he's like, I just didn't get all of it. And I was like, you know what? That's a problem, because he's kind of the target demo. Or he might be a little bit young for it, but they got to streamline it a little bit more. It was a little bit too confusing.
I think that they do a good job of setting it up, where they actually give it – they set it up. They set up the story 2 times. They started up – set it up with an opening voiceover, which I think was added, and then they set it up again later on. So they kind of hammer home what the setup of it is. But like you said, I had a lot of fun watching this movie. I think I had the next amount – if you're going to rank the fun I've had watching Marvel movies, I think there's the Avengers and then there's this movie. I had a ball watching it, partly because I was like, oh, God, where was this Thor movie in the first movie?
Right.
Because I just was having a great time watching it. And because of that, I excused the fact that the villain sort of was empty. And it's interesting. And I think there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that went on. And I would not blame Alan Taylor for everything, because I'm sure that his sort of darker, grimmer vision probably went up against Marvel's sort of funner, family-friendly vision. And I think those clashing is what was felt in this film, whereas like the first 45 minutes is a little bit dark, a little bit grimmer, and then we're having fun. We're having a good time. It's like a buddy road trip movie.
The picture gets significantly better when Loki is released from prison. And it's hard to talk about this without giving away spoilers, but for the first half of the movie, Loki is being punished for the events of the Avengers, and he's banished. I mean, we've seen him in this prison cell. And it just gets – there's just something about the chemistry between Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth that they need to make more movies with just those two guys. You know, because Loki, I think, has been the most interesting villain that Marvel has produced to date. And if they're going to sideline him, and if they're not going to come up with a villain who's equally entertaining, I think Marvel has a little bit of a problem to worry about, because, you know, Iron Man's had 3 swipes at putting out a memorable villain, and in my opinion – hasn't done it yet. They deflated the Mandarin with that twist. I think Cap had a really good vision of a villain with the Red Skull, and Hugo Weaving's great. He's a good scenery chewing actor, but then they sort of relegated him to another dimension, and who knows if we're going to see him again.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if there's a weak spot with these Marvel movies, it's in their villains, and Loki is really the only complex, interesting, addictive villain that they have right now. And so they need to sort of step up the game a little bit, and especially as they introduce these more spacified, I'll call them, villains, especially Guardians of the Galaxy. Thanos is going to play a role, and he'll be back in the picture. And it'll be interesting to see where that comes from. And
who's Lee Pace playing? Lee Pace is the villain, isn't he?
He's playing Ronan.
Oh, right.
In the movie.
Yeah, Guardians feels like it has the chance to be the hard reboot on the Marvel Universe, where it's not, you know, a standalone film with the heroes we already know. It's the studio's chance to just hit a reset button and say, now everything's going to kind of build from maybe this universe, because we know Thanos is going to be a big part of what's to come.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah,
and it's going to be interesting to see kind of and I will get into this a little bit more next week when we talk about the upcoming schedule of superhero movies, because Guardians of the Galaxy really is going to do something different, and I'm excited for it. When I watched James Gunn, who directed the movie, talk about it in videos, he is just over the moon. He is so passionate about this movie, and that's what I like to see from a director who's working on something, to just kind of be passionate and selling it like crazy, and he believes that it's awesome, and that's what you want to see. From you know, versus Alan Taylor, whenever you talk to him, it's something's going wrong. You talk to James Gunn, and he's just like, my actors are awesome, the sets are awesome, everything's awesome, and you're like, okay, you know, this guy believes in it, he's got me pumped.
The Russo brothers seem pretty fired up for Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, and if you look at the trailer, it looks awesome, and I'm stoked for it too. But overall, I think Thor: The Dark World is definitely worth seeing, especially if you're a fan of these Marvel movies, if you're a fan of superhero movies. It's a good time. There's no way you're going to leave that movie not smiling. Maybe 10 minutes after that smile kind of comes off your face, you'll start nitpicking a little bit. But I think there's no way you're leaving that movie without kind of smiling and saying, you know what, that was fun, that was a good time, that at least in my book.
No, I have to totally agree with that, because even with, you know, the little places where I'm picking out problems I had with it, I went 3 out of 5 overall. I still thought it was a solid movie. If you're looking for the type of movie, and I understand what you were saying where you said this is the Thor movie everyone's been waiting for. I mean, in the origin story of Thor, he was kind of relegated to New Mexico and without his costume and his hammer for a long period of time.
And it felt like a set. It felt like they were on a set in New Mexico.
Yeah, so at least one point you see a lot of Thor action, and like I said, the dance of the other nine realms for some big battles, and the concluding fight uses these portals that keeps transporting Thor and Malekith to these different worlds as they continue to fight. No sense whatsoever, but it was very cool to watch.
It makes absolutely no sense, and it's funny. I asked Kevin Feige about that. I was, are there any kind of specific physics that people should read before they watch Thor: The Dark World? And he was laughing, I swear, for a couple of minutes. But, you know, no, there's a lot of physics terms thrown around, but you don't need to know anything. It's just like these holes open up and there's realms and they have fun with it. A really cool thing. There's actually two credit scenes at the end, too. There's one in the middle of the credits and there's one at the very end of the credits. So if you're a fan of those sort of nerdy little things afterwards, stick around for the entire credits to see.
All right. So next week we have to talk about those at length, because I think that they establish some really important things for what Marvel wants to do. But we can't say it yet.
No, we can't say it yet. We're not going to spoil anything. Go see Thor: The Dark World this weekend. Have fun. And if you don't see Thor: The Dark World, there's still a ton of stuff. 12 Years a Slave expands nationwide this week. Sean and I both saw it in Toronto. Incredibly powerful movie. See it. It's going to be a big Oscar movie, so you can get ahead of your Oscar parties by seeing that now. Also, Time expands nationwide, too. So that movie, good date movie. People are looking forward to seeing that, too.
I think Dallas Buyers Club is reaching more markets also.
Exactly.
So if you have not seen Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto in this amazingly powerful human drama about a man who's diagnosed with AIDS and decides to fight back in terms of the drugs that he can bring into the country, it's a tremendous, tremendous film.
Go see that. And Sean and I also did podcasts about all these movies when we were in Toronto. So go over to iTunes and look through and listen to everything. Every single podcast I want you to listen to. That's your homework. For this week. Sean, we got through this whole podcast. Neither of our phone rings. Nobody got to drink. That is our drinking game on this podcast. If one of our phones ring in the background, you get to drink. Unfortunately, everybody's leaving this week's podcast stone cold sober.
Clean and sober.
I apologize. But Sean, thank you very much for joining me. As always.
Of course, always a good time, especially talking Marvel. One of our expertise. We'll continue the discussion next week, where we'll get into the future of the Marvel Universe and all of the big places that it plans to go. And maybe we'll sneak in a little Hunger Games talk next week, too.
Ooh, Hunger Games, Catching Fire. And yes. Who knows, maybe they'll announce something for Star Wars. We could only
hope. Star Wars movie that's never going to happen.
I think that movie literally is living on a galaxy far, far away. But until next time, folks, please drive carefully. And have a fantastic weekend at the movies.